Hello and welcome to the Food and Drink Show here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM. Coming up in this hour of all things food and drink, we're off into the glorious countryside to trace our meat at source, and we'll be visiting Saddlescombe Farm. Yes, it's time to get your wellies on this afternoon here in the Food and Drink Show, because we are literally going to the farm. And I caught up with Camilla from Camilla and Rowley's Farm at Saddlescombe, and they produce fabulous meat. They've got sheep, they've got cattle, and they've got pigs. But I'm not going to say any more just yet, because you will be able to hear from them in this hour. And I do recommend that you have a pen and paper handy, because they're going to recommend some things that you might like to do to keep fit in the fresh air. And I have another guest with me today that's going to be joining us very soon here in the studio. His name is Richard Harris. And if you fancy some volunteering, helping those that could do with a little bit of TLC, a little bit of feeding and bed and breakfast, there's a great project going on in Brighton and Hove to help those who are homeless and keeping them warm and fed over these very chilly winter months. So Richard will be joining us very shortly in the studio to talk about that. So pen and paper handy. And I'm sure you're going to be picking up some really good things you'd like to do for 2016. Now, it would be really good to know how you're listening to us today here on the Food and Drink Show on Radio Reverb. Maybe you're listening on 97.2 FM, or you might be listening on DAB. Welcome to you. And some of you will be listening online whilst working on your laptop, so a big hello to you too. If you would like to make any comments during the show, the best way to do that is to tweet us here at Radio Reverb, or to me personally at Karen Morton 353. Do check out the Radio Reverb Facebook page, and the Food and Drink Show is repeated if you miss out on some of the things and you want to listen again or to recommend to your friends on a Wednesday, Thursday and Friday every week. Times are on the website under schedule, and you can also download a podcast via Podomatic off the Food and Drink Show. So there's lots of ways to catch up on what we're doing. Now, in our December show, we launched a competition for the Russell Hobbs Purity Coffee Maker. It's an all singing, all dancing water purifier come coffee maker. And we're announcing the winner today. But if you didn't manage to join in, and we're going to give you the opportunity to tweet today if you would like a last minute opportunity to enter into this competition. And all we want to know is what you think the value of this particular Russell Hobbs coffee maker is. Is it A, £35, B, £75, or C, £100? Now, the terms and conditions are that the prize is to be collected or dropped off to a Brighton or Hove address. So hard luck to those of you, if you're listening in Canada or somewhere wonderful, that it are unfortunately our budgets don't stretch to sending it that far. But if you live locally or know somebody in Brighton and Hove, then why not enter in? So good luck to you on that. So as I said, coming up, Richard Harris will be joining me here in the studio talking about a project that provides supper, bed and breakfast for those without a roof over their head during the winter months. But first, let's have some more music.
You think you're such a badass. You think you're such a roughneck. But I saw you outside eating truffles with your moms on the patio. I think it's really sad though. I tell you, gonna quit bugging me. Cause I saw her outside sucking dick in the bathroom of the bus of the Iron Maiden cover band. When your pants are neck brains, when your merchants can't stand, I'm gonna win. When your pants are neck brains, when your merchants can't stand, I'm gonna win. Me, I'm just another gringo, a bitter jalapeno. But I get more mantequilla in a week than your bitches gets in a lifetime. When I'm with your moms and the clocks and the scars, wouldn't buckle from a country with a flag on her face and a stolen dick. When your pants sound neck brace, when your bird chest kicks in, I'm gonna win. When your pants sound neck brace, when your bird chest kicks in, I'm gonna win. When your pants sound neck brace, when your bird chest kicks in. you're still a roughneck. Well, let's take this outside.
And there it is. That was actually Wheatus and a song titled Truffles here on the Food and Drink Show on Radio Reverb. Now, I would like to welcome my guest, Richard. Richard, thank you for joining us here on Radio Reverb. Now, Richard, the reason for me asking you in is that we are now in winter. It's got very cold from us having that mild spell up until December. But the evenings get cold, don't they, from November onwards. And in Brighton and Hove, there was a problem that was realised where there was a lot of people left on the street. So can you tell us how the project that you're involved in got started?
Yeah, okay. In 2012, we found out through St Patrick's Church weren't going to be doing the night shelter anymore. So a lot of the churches got together and decided on a way to try and combat this, especially the homeless situation. And they came up with a night shelter project. And it meant basically 14 churches, or as near as damn it to 14 churches, could actually fill this void for the homeless guests. And that's how we all started back in that January 2012. And that's when we started.
Fantastic. So you're saying now that there's a group of churches that are involved in the project. So how does it work?
Right. So St Andrew's, the church that I belong to in Hove, they have been doing this for the Friday evenings. So every evening of the week, one church takes over. So we do this for 9 weeks. So every day is covered by a particular church. Then after the 9 weeks, another church takes over for us. And the idea being another church takes over from every other church. So overall, we try and get 14 churches to do a 2 week or a 14-day program. We haven't managed to get 14 totally. I think we've got 12 now. So two churches do two times the amount of us. But 3 years ago, we actually did the full 18 weeks.
Wow.
So it was a fantastic experience.
So it's quite a tall order to kind of have this rolling out. And amongst all the churches. Now, are you taking different guests every night, the churches? So how does it work for you all coming together?
Right, the guests have to be pre-registered. Because we're all volunteers, we haven't got the qualifications to be dealing with this. So obviously the guests are all pre-registered and they're done through St Peter's, information from St Peter's Church in Brighton, First Base in Brighton, and of course off the fence in Portland Road, Hove. And once they're registered with us, they can come for about 6 to 7 weeks. And then the idea being if there's a backlog of guests trying to get in, then they will get in as well later on. But we can only do 15 maximum per night.
Mm-hmm. So that's the maximum. So there's a lot of people on the street. So how do you actually choose, if that's the right word, the people that become guests of the Night Shelter Project?
Yeah, it's difficult. And we don't actually do that side of it, the choosing. It's all done in the registration documents. We are aware that the homeless guests, they do have to be trying to sort a few things out. So in other words, not just using the shelter for their own comfort. They've got to be working towards finding somewhere else, finding a job, finding accommodation. And that's really what we ask for. Obviously, there are drink and there are drug issues, and we stress to them they can't carry this on. They have to stop this while they're in the shelter. And it's a nice way for them to try and start afresh again.
Mm. Absolutely. Well, I mean, it's a wonderful thing that everybody's coming together to help. And of course, the key thing is that we've mentioned there that it is giving one night in each church over this winter phase. And you come in and you get a supper and you have a bed for the night and you get breakfast the next day. So being the Food and Drink Show, we're very keen. I mean, through to everybody's heart is food, isn't it? So how does the food work?
Well, St Andrew's, we do Friday night, and Friday night is fish and chip night. So we decided a long time ago that we'd carry this on, and we chose to do fish and chips on a Friday night. And it's really gone down so well with the guests. I mean, their eyes light up when they get the fish and chips. And of course, it's not just that. You know, we offer them whatever they want, really, from the fish and chip shop. And that's lovely. So that's sorted out. And then in the morning, we provide a really lovely cooked full breakfast. Eggs, bacon, sausage, beans, the works, toast. And also cold cereal as well if they want. And juices, teas and coffees. Just to give them a good start for the day, because I'm sure you know, Karen, what it's like when you've had a good breakfast inside you. You feel you can make a start on the day.
You definitely do. And it's such a nice thing, because it does. It sets you up for the day whenever you're going out to face the cold again.
Yeah.
Now, you showed me the schedule that you have for all volunteers coming in and out, and it literally is everything from how to turn the keys in the door through to how to take out televisions and put things away. But the bedding is all, it comes in big bags. So from each church, it's delivered to the church halls, and it's the same beds and bedding. So, you know, how does that all happen?
Right, we have numbered bags, for a number relevant for each guest, and that bag gets put into a van, centrally coordinated by St. Peter's, and driven either by Toby or Hannah. And they bring all the bedding from the previous church to us at St. Andrew's, normally about between 7 and 7.30. And then we encourage the guests to bring all the bags out and set up for us. And it just empowers them as well. So they don't feel like we're just doing it for everything for them all the time. They actually help us out.
Wonderful. Now, Richard, I'm just going to put on another track, and then we're going to come back and talk about the Night Shelter Project.
Miss Otis regrets she's unable to lunch today. Madam, Miss Otis regrets she's unable to lunch today. She is sorry to be delayed, but last evening down on Lover's Lane she strayed. Madam, Miss Otis regrets she's unable to lunch today. When she woke up and found that her dream of love was gone, madam, she ran to the man.
The late, great Kirsty MacColl. And a fabulous track, really, from the best of Kirsty MacColl. And Do you know what? When I was choosing this track, Miss Otis regrets not being able to lunch today, as all ladies do. I was playing through some of the tracks and do you know what? I've just remembered what a great album this is and I so enjoyed playing it all. So if you get a chance, dig deep into your CD collection. I'm sure you have it. Or go online and just see if you can on iTunes get the best of Kirsty MacColl. There are so many winners on this album and I'm sure that you're going to enjoy it. I'm Karen Morton. You're listening to The Food and Drink Show here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM. We're also on DAB and you can listen to us online. With me here in the studio is Richard Harris and we're talking about the Night Shelter Project, which is run through the churches of Brighton and Hove through the winter months, giving people who are living homeless on the streets a chance to have a warm bed and a hot supper, fish and chips and a breakfast, and wish them on their way for the day until they go on to the next venue, church venue, the following night. So, Richard, it's a wee bit like a roving supper party, isn't it? It's like a roving B&B.
It is, yeah. I mean, we've had some great experience with them all. I mean, this year in particular was a little bit tricky for us because our Friday evening was on Christmas Day night, so of course the fish and chip shops are shut.
Oh.
And also we had New Year's Day as well. Of course they're shut for that one as well. So we had to improvise. So my initial thoughts for that were, for Christmas Day, go for a nice simple sausages and mash, which I thought that'd be nice and easy to do. But no, my volunteers said no. They had better ideas and they came up with the full roast, the full Christmas dinner. So that's what we chose to do in the end.
So a full Christmas dinner at St. Andrew's Old Church of Hove Hall, and the volunteers came in to cook it and everything.
The turkey was brought in cooked, and the roast potatoes were done as well. We even had fair share turning up, which was a great result for us because we hadn't got any tea bags that night. And we can't have a night shelter without tea bags.
No, God.
And Fair Share really were brilliant. And he had a look in the back of his van and he said, yes, we've got some tea bags here and some sugar. So that was a great result for us. And then New Year's Day, we did a similar thing, except we did jacket potatoes and a fantastic spread of toppings and a choice of fillings for the jacket potatoes.
Isn't that fantastic?
Yeah, it was brilliant. It worked really well.
So normally, though, as you say, it's fish and chips. Mm. Now, do you get the fish and chips provided to you free or do you have to pay for those?
No, we do pay for that. Ram's Bottoms in Bletchingham Road provide it for us. They've been fantastic. So we give them a phone call about 8:30 in the evening to let them know how many guests we've got and how many volunteers are on. And yeah, they're brilliant. They take the order from us and then within about 20 minutes, 25 minutes, they deliver it to us. But they do give us a little discount as well, which obviously helps.
Oh, wow, yeah, that's wonderful. Really good of them.
Yeah.
Now, the thing is that, of course, you've got the goodwill of volunteers, but the food costs money, and I'm sure there's a lot of other expenses that go to running such a shelter. So where do you get this money from?
Yeah, the fundraising is always an issue. We've been doing this for about 4 years now. This is our fifth session that we've done it for. And I was very lucky. I had some fantastic donations from year one from Unite, and they supplied us with a lot of money to get us started. But obviously, we have to keep thinking of continually funding this programme. You're looking at about £150 per night on average for the fish and chips, sometimes a bit less, depending on the amount of guests and volunteers we have. But I have to say we've had some fantastic support also from St Andrew's Primary School in Hove. They've been an absolute dream for us. They've organised lots of sponsored events for us. And last year they did a wonderful Christmas carols event at All Saints Church, and we got a lot of proceedings from that. So it really did take a lot of pressure off the funding for this year and also last year as well. And they're coming up trumps again this year. They're going to do some sponsored events for us as well, St Andrew's School. So they've been absolutely wonderful. We've had some fantastic donations from people within the church. We've had one older person giving us their heating allowance for the year,
gosh,
which is quite astounding.
It is.
I mean, it just goes to show, Karen, what sort of remarkable impact this thing does. I mean, it's getting the word out, and as soon as that word goes out, I'm getting phone calls from people, donations of hats, gloves, socks, shoes, clothing. It really, it's just quite remarkable, quite remarkable.
So, Richard, if any of our listeners now to Brighton and Hove are, would like to get involved, either to volunteer their time to help cook, and I know you work shifts, don't you? You have an early shift, which is creating sort of the setting everything up. You have a night shift through the night where you need some volunteers just to be present. And then you have the those that come in at 6 o'clock in the morning to cook the breakfast and get everything ready. Yeah. And then there's the food itself where you need money. You need money to help with supplies and things like donations of clothes, warm clothing as well. Mm. So how can people help?
Right. I would suggest really email me. A priority really would be. And that's richard.harris687@ntlworld.com. I'll repeat that later. But that, I think that's the best thing to do, because there is such a wide avenue of things that people can actually do. And it's probably best to speak to me first or liaise with me first. Donations, we've finished from our point of view at St Andrews now. We've done our 9 weeks. But obviously there are other churches that are going for the next 9 weeks. And I know Toby and Hannah would always be very welcome to hear of future volunteers as well. So I think my email address would be
that would be great. Could you just give us that again, please, Richard?
It's all lowercase. It's richard.harris687@ntlworld.com.
And I will repeat that as well at the end of the show. So that people can have that. So there's lots of ways, and I know that I've spoken to some of the volunteers, and anyone that has been working on the project, what it appears to me is that they're getting even more out of being involved. They just love being with all the people that are benefiting, all the guests, and just find it so rewarding, and just keep going with the project. They really enjoy it.
Yeah, well, I've had a lot of volunteers from day one, and they've kept going for the past 5 sessions, and every year just seems to get better. It's hard to believe, really, because I always start each new year thinking it's never going to be as good as last year, but it seems to surpass it. And I don't know whether it's because we're getting better at it. Of course we are getting better at it, but maybe we're getting a bit more calm about things as well. We know what we've got to do. There's some lovely banter that goes on in the hall between the volunteers and the guests sometimes as well, and I think that really does rub off on the guests. They can see we're quite a friendly group, and it really does pay off well.
So this is the Brighton and Hove Church's Night Shelter Project, where during the winter months all the different churches take a night. They provide supper, a warm bed for the night, for a group of people who are living on the streets, which is all sorted and organised. If you want to volunteer, you just have to get involved and show up, and there's somebody there always that knows what's happening. You get a fish and chip supper, a nice slap up breakfast as well, even if you're volunteering. And you do need money to buy food and keep this going, and supplies and clothing and all the rest of it. So do, if you're interested, listening to the Food and Drink Show here on Radio Reverb, and you'd like to get in touch with Richard, it's richard.harris687@ntlworld.com. There you go. That's how you can get in touch. So, Richard, thank you for joining us today.
We wish
you all the very best of luck.
Thank you.
And we'll come, the Food and Drink Show, we'll come down and do some cooking
with you.
The next time you're involved in the scheme. So thank you for joining us here on the show.
That's brilliant.
So you're listening to Radio Reverb 97.2 FM. This is the Food and Drink Show, and we hope that you've been inspired to get involved with the Night Shelter Project.
Be the
Snow Patrol and a great song called Chocolate. Well, here on the Food and Drink Show, I went down to the farm. I put my wellies on and I went to visit Camilla and Rowley at Saddlescombe Farm, because we're often talking about how we're preparing meats and food and making all sorts of dishes, and I wanted to kind of go back to source. And what better than to take a look at the care that goes into meat that's locally sourced. And being a bit of a townie, it can be a little bit difficult sometimes when you're seeing the animals and just making that connection from field to plate. But Camilla tells us more about the story and about her love of farming and the animals. And here she is to inspire you, hopefully, to buy your meat locally.
I'm Camilla Pusey. I farm with my husband, Rowley, and we are farmers at Saddlescombe Farm, which is owned by the National Trust. So we are tenants here, and we have been here for just over 2 years now. And we absolutely love it. We moved down from Oxfordshire, where we were farming before. We brought all of our sheep with us, all 350 of them, loaded them up on a lorry up in Oxfordshire, and then they arrived back down here in Sussex. And everyone always asks, gosh, that must have been so complicated and so difficult. But actually, that that was the easiest part of our move, because they literally got loaded up and unloaded. And they were like, oh, Sussex grass, this looks quite nice.
So definitely a wardrobe here of welly boots and big coats.
I probably should have worn some
miles away from your attire when you would have been working in London, Camilla.
Yes, very much so, yeah. Bit different these days.
So with the sheep that you have grazing, what sort of acreage are they on?
So the farm in total is about 450 acres, and that's difficult to kind of visualize, but it's I'd say we're not a huge farm, but we're not a small farm. It's a good area of grassland for them to kind of have and graze, really. And this winter, because it seems so mild, you know, the grass has kind of kept growing. But the problem is that in the winter, even if the grassland still grows, it hasn't got the kind of goodness in it as it does in the spring, because it obviously needs the sunshine to produce the nutrients in it. So they're sort of what we call eating green water, really. There's it's grass, but it hasn't got a lot of kind of goodness. So sometimes we have to supplement that with hay or silage if we think they're lacking a little bit in some goodness and some mineral buckets. So we just have to keep a bit of an eye on them in winter, to make sure they're kind of getting a good balance in their diet.
Since we've been here, we've also started producing beef, which is really exciting. So we've now got, as well as our flock of sheep, we've got a beautiful herd of traditional Sussex cows, and they've been a real asset to the farm, actually, and they look absolutely fantastic. You know, where we farm, you know, it's in the middle of the beautiful Sussex Downs, and they just blend in and kind of bring the landscape alive, really. Particularly when in the springtime, they're the sort of contrast of their beautiful kind of brown velvety coats against the green grass is just so amazing.
So here we're just approaching, let's walk around the side here.
Oh, there's chickens underneath the horse box.
So these are four of our Sussex cows in here, and it's really nice, actually. I rather like having a view of them inside, because it's fun being able to come and look at them and bring the children over to say hi to them when they're back from school.
One having a little whittle as we talk.
Hello. There we are. And this one's particularly friendly. He loves a good scratch, don't you?
Hello. And his lovely big tongue there licking your hand. Beautiful. I mean, the one thing about cows is that they've got the most gorgeous eyes and eyelashes. And there, I'm just up close now seeing these Sussex cows, is that they've got sort of near like a woolly coat, haven't they?
I mean, they're full kind of winter coat at the moment.
It's just, they're gorgeous. You're really lovely. I know, hello. And I'm afraid I have nothing for you to eat. Nothing for you. Oh, and it's a lovely scratchy tongue there in my hand. Thank you for that little lick. Yes, you're just lovely. Look, another one coming in there too.
Oh. So we have different groups on the farm, and I have to keep remembering who's who, because then we have to keep them all separate, because we have our bull called the General, who's out in field on his own at the moment, so we have to make sure he can't get in with anyone he's not meant to be getting in with.
Right. I'm just looking here. There's this lovely tuft of hair at the top of this cow's head, and it's like as if it's styled.
Yes.
You look very bright in there, very... very rock and roll with that hair.
Yes, he does.
The top. Yeah, gorgeous.
He's lovely.
Sort of a
ready
brown.
He's my favourite, actually. He likes a good scratch, don't you? Good boys.
And they've got their yellow tags in their ears with their numbers, so.
Yes, yeah, all the earrings, all their jewellery, don't you?
And what does that help you with?
So, one ear is our. What we have, kind of every farm in the country has what you call your kind of holding number, so that identifies the cow to us and to our farm. And then the other one, so they've got one in each ear, the other one is their number, and I think it's also got their mother's number as well, so again you can trace back their breeding and exactly, you know, where they've come from, which again is really, really important. But you know, the paperwork is quite a headache, but extremely important, because, you know, you need to know, be able to kind of trace them all back. But it, you know, it takes a lot of work to do it. So it's great to have the cows on the farm as well as the sheep. It kind of brings diversity, and it's also good for the wildlife, because part of taking on the tenancy here is very much, as well as farming the landscape, we've got to also farm it for food, but also for wildlife, making sure we're taking care of that. And sheep and cows graze in a very different way. So sheep will kind of tend to nibble and get much closer to the ground, whereas cows kind of use their tongues and kind of tug, if you like. And different kind of species of grass and wildflowers will respond differently to that. And you could kind of need both of them to kind of encourage them to grow. So already it's been brilliant, because we've seen really amazing, you know, species of kind of chalk grassland flowers coming back, which is great. And it's all through kind of careful management, really.
Well, you sometimes hear, Camilla, you know, the argument that actually rearing cows is not good for the environment from a sort of a green emissions point of view. So what would be your argument to that? You've just mentioned wildlife.
Yeah, I think it's down to the system that you use, really. I mean, we are here, we're very what you call extensive farming. So they have a lot of area to kind of eat and roam across, I guess. We move them around quite regularly. They only come indoors if you know that it's getting very, very wet. And, you know, we kind of need to keep a bit more of an eye on them. But otherwise, you know, they're out the whole year round. And that, to be fair, is also because of the ground that we farm. We have very porous kind of chalk downland, which is very forgiving, particularly because it's been so wet recently, hasn't it? So you know, lots of farmers, even our neighbours over the road, you know, they can't do that because there would be no grass left. So yes, we're fortunate because we are able to run what we call an extensive system. So the cows, literally, because they're a traditional breed, they are able to what we call fatten on just grass. So we don't need to give them any extra kind of what we call concentrate, like nuts or other kind of food. It's kind of quite fortunate that they can actually, you know, fatten and do well on the grass. So we'll wander over in a minute and see. We've got four in the barn at the moment, but they're just being fed on silage that was cut last summer, so it's still our own.
So all organic beef then?
So it's not organic, because if we need to treat them, if they're ill or if they're poorly, then we will call our vets.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're a strong believer in that. If an animal's suffering, just like when we're poorly, we need to go to the doctor. So, no, we're not organic, but we obviously only use, you know, antibiotics when it's necessary. We don't have that stamp saying we are, but we don't believe we need it. Anyone can come and have a look. Anyone can come and visit us and have a look at what we're doing. And, you know, we're really proud of it.
So, yes, so local cows, local Sussex cows. Breed, which is exciting, on a Sussex farm, which is so nice. I really want to kind of go back into, you know, sort of how did you and your husband get into farming? What drove you to the passion?
So we're both from farming backgrounds. My father was, so we both grew up on farms. I grew up on arable, so a farm producing crops like wheat and barley and oats, all going into cereals and all sorts of things that we eat. Also, we had sheep, and my husband grew up on a dairy farm. And so I think a lot of people say farming is in your blood, and it's certainly in both of ours. And before we started farming, we worked for an amazing charity called LEAF, Linking Environment and Farming, which is where we both met. And LEAF is all about helping farmers not only kind of produce food, but taking care of the environment as well. So doing the two very much going hand in hand. And there's a third string as well, which is doing all this great stuff, but then you need to tell people about it. So whilst we were at LEAF, we helped set up lots of farms to be able to host visits and start sharing the story of food and farming and what farmers are up to, really. And really, my husband helped set up an initiative called Open Farm Sunday, which is like a national farm open day. It happens in June every year. This year it's on the 5th of June. And when we'll be open. And that's just a fantastic opportunity for people to come and visit and generally kind of have a day on the farm and really enjoy it. So that's a big part of what we do as well.
And wonderful, this whole thing about sort of the importance of looking after and nurturing the countryside and
absolutely.
Local nature.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, you move from Oxfordshire to Sussex.
Yes.
So what prompted that move?
The opportunity here. Where we were in Oxfordshire was great, but it was very much, for want of a better word, a kind of starter tenancy. Great opportunity to kind of get on the farming ladder. Our landlords there called the Earth Trust, and they had an initiative called Farm Step, which was primarily for people wanting to get on the farming ladder who don't have the opportunity to kind of do it otherwise. It's very hard to get into farming unless it's either in your family or an inherited tenancy, neither of which we were fortunate to have. So, yes, the opportunity in Oxfordshire was a very good one for us. But it sort of, we couldn't progress after a certain amount of time. We couldn't expand and kind of do all the things we wanted to do, really. So we were kind of looking for another opportunity and saw Saddlescombe Farm National Trust tenancy and applied for it. And here we are. So we were very lucky.
It's a beautiful site because, you know, you're just sort of, as you say, nestled in that little dip in what is called Saddlescombe. And I've been walking here for years and going through the courtyard. You're in a little community too as well, because there's other
lovely.
People
yeah, we
living,
share the
working
farm.
The land.
Yeah, which is really nice.
And if you've children, which I take
yep,
it you
we
have,
do.
It's lovely. You're in a little community and you're literally 10-minute drive from in the heart of Brighton City.
Yes, which is really important for us for building up our business, really. So whilst it's lovely farming here and looking after the landscape, and in order to be able to kind of do what we're doing here, we need support. So we're actively, you know, promoting and selling our lamb and our beef into, you know, Brighton. So we're supplying quite a few restaurants and pubs now in Brighton and nearby to us here as well, which is really exciting. So people are beginning to kind of support us through that way, and you know, it's that wonderful thing of knowing how your food has been produced, knowing where it's come from, being able to actually visit us if you want to, you know, which I think is all part of the story. Both the ginger fox here down the road and the ginger pig in Hove The Royal Oak in Poynings, and the 64 Degrees, which is in the heart of the Lanes in Brighton as well. And also the lovely bakery, Sugar Dough, which is right on the seafront in Hove. And they've just opened up another one in town. So, yeah, and we're talking to a few other people as well, a few other chefs. So we'll see what happens. But it's great, actually. And we enjoy kind of going in and delivering to them. And we've got a great friend, Ellie, who runs a fantastic business called Forgotten Cuts, which is at Brighthelm on every Friday in the summer, under Street Diner. And she's all about using the cuts that perhaps people don't always use on the animal. So she sourced quite a lot from us, and she's an incredible chef.
So she's actually making foods that we can all go in and buy.
Oh, absolutely.
Buy lunch
Friday lunchtimes. Yeah.
Brighthelm Centre.
Yeah, you must go. It's just incredible.
As you say, you are a business. You're not just having it so you can look out at all your over 300 sheep and cows in the field and go, oh, aren't they lovely?
Yeah.
So from thinking about from field to shop to plate, as well as supplying the restaurants and shops, sort of myself and any of our listeners could actually buy meat directly from you. So how does that work?
So either by just giving us a ring, really, or dropping us an email. We generally need it depends sort of what time of the month it is, but we generally say it's about 2 weeks' notice we need, just to kind of, you know, take in their order and get it all ready. So it's quite an easy process, really.
And we can do this online.
Yeah, our website's camillaandrowley.co.uk.
Excellent, couldn't be easier. So I'm talking to Camilla, who has a farm. It's called Saddlescombe Farm, and they rear and breed sheep and cows locally here to Sussex. So it's really great to know what you're doing.
You know, farming never stops. We never have a day off, as it were. That's what people always ask us. How do you go on holiday? When do you have time off? But you don't farm to have time off, really. You farm because you love it and it's a lifestyle. And, you know, our weekends we're still out and enjoying kind of checking all the animals as a family, really, and having friends over and them joining us doing that, really. So we've got lots of projects, everything from all the hedge laying that needs to be done on the farm, and we've got a lovely group out this morning, actually, as I'm speaking now. They're over on a bank helping us do something that we call scrub clearing, which is basically taking down all the brambles and the gorse and some of the blackthorn. Again, just basically to give the grasses and the species-rich kind of banks and of the chalkland kind of an opportunity to breathe, really, and have some light and see what kind of comes up. So once kind of all this sort of dense scrub is cleared, it's like the blank kind of breathes, really, and thinks, great, you know, I'm able to kind of regenerate. And again, through careful grazing, really, you know, we'll be able to get back some really quite interesting wildflowers on there, which is fantastic. So there's a lot of work that we do that we certainly can't do on our own. So we have a lot of lovely people. So we've got they're called the Port Slade Green Gym with us this morning, who are people who've retired but still want to remain active. And they come and help. And we had the Brighton Conservation volunteers with us on Tuesday. And then the National Trust also have groups of volunteers who occasionally kind of come and help as well. We have people who come and help specifically for lambing. Generally, they're normally part of a group, really, because it's just easier for us, really. There's only myself and my husband, and we have one other employee, our sheepdog Belle. So if people are interested, the best thing to do is to contact the National Trust or join groups such as the Brighton Conservation Volunteers or a local green gym, that kind of thing. So at the moment we have, I guess, more lamb that's available on a regular basis, just because, you know, we've got our flock that as the size that it as it is. Beef will become more and more available as our kind of herd becomes more established. So yes, there's plenty of supply. That's for certain. So the more kind of private sales, that's what we want to do. We take a lot of time and a lot of trouble looking after all the animals, and it's just really rewarding and amazing for us then being able to sell it directly to people and to get, you know, the great feedback which we get of saying it's delicious and, you know, it's just lovely.
With fruit and veg, the experts all say health-wise, buy locally grown produce, it's much better for you and in season. Are the same principles there for meat?
I mean, looking at the bigger picture, yes, in the sense that if you're only travelling 2 miles to go and collect your local meat box, that's got to be good, isn't it? And I think it's the whole story. You're not just buying the meat. You hope that they're buying into the fact that they're supporting us, and on a cold and wet and windy day when we're out checking the animals, it's kind of really nice to know that people are, you know, wanting to support what we're doing, and they actually care about the fact that we've, you know, laid another hedge this year, and we've replanted a field at the back here that I'm just looking at through the window with, you know, a new wildflowers that hopefully everyone's going to be able to enjoy. So yes, I think it's more of yes, of course it's about the meat, but it's also about much more, really.
Of course, people can come and walk all around the lands
here. Absolutely.
And you can, in the farmyard, I'm not sure when it's reopened again, but you can have your coffee and your lunches and sandwiches and
yeah,
the stays
absolutely.
Out. So
absolutely.
Really developing.
And, we have 4 open days coming up over lambing. So we're open the first 2 weekends in April, which is the 2nd and the 3rd and the 9th and the 10th. And we also offer people the experience to come and be a shepherd for the day. So that's a very popular Christmas present, actually. We get lots of people buying kind of vouchers to give to people at Christmas, and then they come and either... Most people redeem them during lambing, actually. That's a really popular time. But people can come at any time of year. And I just think it's a great present because it's different. And whether it's, you know, delivering a newborn lamb or helping a lamb to suckle or helping Belle round up another group of sheep, you know, and it's just great.
So we've got some... These are not cows and they're certainly not sheep.
No, so these are our Gloucester Old Spot piggies.
Aww. And where's the breed
from? Three little boys here. We sometimes have saddlebacks as well, but at the moment we've got their Old Spots. So again, these are a traditional breed. They're not what you get in the supermarkets because they tend to... We have to be quite careful, actually, because they can tend to get too fat, don't you, boys?
Oh.
So, but we love them because they're just real...
So they're white with sort of black
spots.
Black spots.
Yeah.
And are they traditional to Sussex?
No, not to Sussex.
But to the UK. Hello, boys.
But they're kind of getting a lot more popular.
So they have. So you've got three pigs.
Yeah, 3 at the moment.
Yeah.
And yeah, again, you know, pork sales are very popular. Actually, we sell out very quickly.
I would imagine.
Yeah. So.
So do you name them?
We don't. Actually, Molly, our daughter, named the first ones we had, and it was... I mean, I'm not saying it's not hard now, but it just really is hard because we, you know, we're with them all the time, but they have a great life. They run... I mean, it's very muddy at the moment, but they've got a huge area where they run about.
And what a great view they have as well.
Exactly.
It's so beautiful. And they are so lovely. I mean, you just can't help but like these guys. So you've got a gorgeous big pot of what looks like the leftovers from your dinner.
Yeah, lots of...
I could eat that bowl, you know. It looks so delicious. It's pastries, apples. They're now following you, Camilla, very closely. In fact, they're just on top of you. So excited to get this food.
Every pig you will buy, they do have to have the kind of traditional nuts, but then we kind of supplement them with apples and all sorts of other goodies that we have around. And they do really well on it. The fact that they're outside and able to forage and root about, they think is wonderful.
You can hear they're scrapping over it there, trying to get the last little bit out of their trough. But this is so lovely. So people can come up here and they can see the pigs. And they
yeah,
can
so
see
on
the
our
sheep.
Open days, yeah, very much so. They people can come and they, you know, people love pigs. They yeah. absolutely love because they're so interactive.
But they look so great. And this is such a perfect site for them. And
yeah,
they have their own little stone cottage and all this beautiful sort of fields and woodland. And it's gorgeous. A beautiful setting for them.
Yeah, I think they like it. So they yeah. seem pretty happy.
One of the things that I have to say thank you and to other farmers around the area, because when I'm travelling up and down this road going past Saddlescombe and heading towards Aldbourne, and it's lovely in the spring when all the lambs are there and it brings us such joy driving back and forward. Then the sign goes up to say that you can get your lamb and they're still in the field. So for us townies, sometimes it's a little bit, oh no. And that's the men as well. We get terribly emotional about it all. What do you say to people like us?
Well, I know, and it's probably even worse on our lambing open days because people wander around the barn seeing all the lambs and then we're in the yard selling our lamb burgers. And I just say that the landscape is not a coincidence. You know, we couldn't keep, you know, we are a business and we love it. We take care of them. But, you know, at the end of the day, we can't just keep them just for the sake of keeping them, you know, and it's important. Meat is, you know, good part, a sensible amount of meat is an important part of our diets. As long as it's been well cared for, well looked after, and you respect what you eat, then I think it's, you know, you can't get a lot better than that, really.
Mm-hmm. And at what, I mean, with the lambs, from what age are they whenever...
So they can go from sort of 3 months old, and the meat you get back is very pale, very tender, people kind of like that. Or some people prefer what we call hogget, which is when they're sort of over a year old, which is a darker, kind of perhaps richer meat. And then going on to mutton, which again is a year older than that, which is definitely a very dark but delicious meat that, you know, when you slow roast it.
And price-wise, how does it vary when you kind of go from lamb to hugget to
Similar. Mutton is a little bit cheaper, but it's becoming very popular, actually. It's had a real sort of revival.
So, Camilla, thank you very much indeed for showing us around your farm here at Saddlescombe.
Thank you.
Ow, money. Now, funny, all I own. Is this lifetime of experience that carried me away from home? Well, I came with all of the dreamers, one more great fortune to seek, one more pair of stars. There was a train from New York City, well, to Springfield, Tennessee. Now, old man, he raised tobacco, and his wife, she stitched acne boots. And I worked 10 years for the Coke. Save those letters.
nice country tune there from Hans Chu. Well, you've been listening to the Food and Drink Show here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM with myself, Karen Morton. And we were down in the farm with Camilla and Rowley at Saddlescombe Farm. And if you would like to find out how you can order meat, you can go onto their website, www.camillaandrowley.co.uk. And you can also find out how you can help out around the farm. Also, a big thanks to Richard Harris for telling us about the church's night shelter project over the winter months, opening up to give shelter and some hot food and company to those who are homeless. If you would like to volunteer, then do contact richard.harris 687 at ntlworld.com. So that's it from me here on the programme. Do join me next month, and we're going to Barkham Nurseries to get juicing and making smoothies.